Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
Howdy there, friends, and thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives. I'm Cam Hale, as always. Joining me today in this very rain-soaked afternoon, Mr. Kyle Filio Filson.
Hello, everybody. I hope everybody's doing great out there. I am sick of the rain. It's been raining. It's cold. It's like 34 degrees. It's been raining for like 5 days. What drives me crazy is I don't mind the rain so much, but when it's raining and cold like this, the kids are stuck inside with me.
Yeah.
They start developing cabin fever. And after about 3 days, they're driving me crazy, folks. Anybody who has a large family understands what I mean. I have three boys, and they're constantly fighting and arguing and wrestling or whatever. They're just being kids. You know, I'm not mad at
them. They're just being boys.
But it does start to wear on you. You're like, please, would it just be sunny tomorrow so they can go outside and play?
Please. I can't school take it start anymore. Back, please.
Yeah, right?
I got to get back to my grind.
I can't wait to go back to work.
How sad is that? Right? Yeah. I hope everybody that celebrates had a great vacation, had a great little fun time filling your bellies. Man, I'm with you. The rain, I've had enough. Look, I'm thankful for the rain. There's a lot of things I understand why we have to have it, but that's it. I can't deal with it no more, man.
I just watched a lot of college football.
But even after a while, you're just like, I can't
even
do
that gets
this.
Bored. I get
I'm ready
crazy.
To go back to work.
Yeah, I am too.
I'm ready to go back to work. I'm glad to get to talk to you folks. This is a great getaway. I feel wonderful. Well, we're talking about thankful and being thankful for things today. Kyle, I got something I think you're thankful for.
What's that?
I don't know if you saw this from Business Insider today, you ought to be thankful for the 15 astounding technologies that DARPA is working on right now.
Oh, I am glad that DARPA created the internet along with Al Gore. But as far as a lot of these robots that they're designing, no, I'm not too excited about it.
Well, we're going to discuss a little bit of
now?
This.
What are they doing now? Okay.
Exacto stands for Extreme Accuracy Task Ordnance. This is a bullet that can change direction in flight.
I thought it was a knife. Was it an X-Acto knife?
The X-Acto knife, yeah.
Wait a minute. The bullet can change flight in mid-flight.
It says it's the military's first guided, self-guided bullet. Now listen to this. It says X-Acto bullets are able to change their path during flight to correct for the movement of a target or any other factors that might have driven the bullet off course. It features optical tips that can detect lasers on a target, tiny fins on the bullet, then guide the bullet toward the laser. And the Pentagon successfully conducted a live fire test using these rounds.
Does it take into account the curvature of the Earth?
Here we go. Anyway, now, of course, we've already talked about, this is called HELADS. You know, I've talked about the High Energy Liquid Laser Area Defense System.
Okay.
Basically, it's aimed at neutralizing surface-to-air missile threats to the aircraft. We're talking about surface-to-air missiles are faster than the plane it's targeting. Of course,
that would make sense. Yeah.
Yes, and it makes it difficult for aircraft to evade it. All right, HELAD program use lasers to disable the incoming missile.
That's cool.
That's pretty badass. Now, it also said they're planning on increasing the strength of the HELAD's laser in order to make it an offensive weapon, so they can destroy stuff on the ground. Now, we talked about it already where they were talking about destroying stuff on the ground. Now, here's something else you're going to like. There's an Ares program. They say it's a Skunk Works extension of DARPA's Transformer program. And they're attempting to develop an actual flying car. Ares is a dual-mold vehicle capable of driving on the ground and achieving high-speed vertical takeoff and landing with twin tilting fans that allow it to hover and land. Basically, it's going to be like a truck. It's an Osprey truck, so they can have stuff in it. You can drive it, then you can take off and then land it and then drive it around and unload it and all that. Yeah.
How amazing is that? I mean, it really is bizarre that we haven't developed that.
Yes.
I mean, like when you look at all the cartoons, whether it's the Jetsons or even just artwork from books that they thought we would look like in the year 2015, almost every one of them has flying cars.
Yes.
But we never built that.
Well, because we're not adult enough to be in them. We can't even drive the cars on the interstate now without running into stuff. How are we going to be flying around and crash and land in a house? Because we're dummies.
Did you see, it just reminds me, I just read an article. Did you see there was a mechanic? He was he was a mechanic on fighter jets, okay? For years and years and years. And one time, there was a lot of people not looking around. He just climbed inside an A4 and took off and flew the thing around and landed, and they put him in jail. He's like, I always wanted to fly one. All he's ever flown, apparently had hundreds of hours in a simulator. But he just decided one time.
And he flew it perfectly.
Landed it. Yep.
Why would you put him in jail? The dude didn't tear up nothing.
Apparently, just be like, it's illegal to steal jets and fly them around.
But he brought it back. He just borrowed it. It's like, run and go get a beer.
Apparently, he had failed some kind of test years ago. It was a medical test, not an intellect. And they said that he would never be able to be a fighter pilot. So that was like his dream. And so instead, he became a mechanic on the planes. But he just said, you know, screw it. I'm getting in that plane.
I'm going with it. It's funny you bring that up. That was my son's dream ever since he was little, was to be a fighter pilot. That's all he wanted to do. And his eyes were so bad that they said that before he even tried, they were like, you're never going to be able to do it.
Well, I don't think there's going to be too many more fighter pilots around. I mean, the way this DARPA stuff's going.
The way the DARPA stuff's going, yeah.
There's not going to be the need for humans to be in it.
Now, we've already talked.
Yeah.
Well, the reason they were going to develop these Ares is they talk about getting away from IEDs. So if there's a dangerous part of the road, then you can just fly over it and then land where you want to. Then they're also
flooding waters.
Now you're right. Now they're going to have those HELADs they can put on them so they can shoot down like air-to-air or surface-to-air missiles on them. So maybe that'll be even better. We've already discussed, this is part of the other one, the pack animals. We've already talked about, you know, they have all the pack animals where they call it the LS3, the legged squad support systems. We've talked about the Alpha Dog and things like that where you can pack it around. They've also got self-calculating gun scopes that they're working with. So you got to imagine self-guiding bullets and self-calculating gun scopes. This is called the One-Shot XG program. All right? Now, it's designed to calculate variables as crosswind and also maximum effective range of the weapon, weapon alignment, and it uses an internal Linux-based computer system for it.
So you don't even need to master the technique of actually long-range shooting anymore.
They're going to have everything where it does it for you. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Now, they've got a thing that looks like a rangefinder where they can actually call in almost immediate close air support. So imagine you're getting attacked somewhere, you pull this rangefinder out and you click it, and then wherever the base is at just starts launching rockets to where that thing's lased, and that's what starts hitting.
It's like Call of Duty.
Exactly. It's exactly what it's like. Now, look, folks, we can get into all kinds of stuff. They're working on a thing that allows people to hear what different like languages, where as they're talking, it's a speaker that picks up what they're saying and then tells you in English what's being said.
Yeah.
They're working on that. They're talking about drones. They're working on a drone, a solar drone that they claim can stay airborne for years, up to 5 years. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're working on those optical lenses, like contact lenses for your eyes that allow to have displays printed out on the contact lens.
Now that's cool. That and the translator, those I'm
yes.
perfectly comfortable with these inventions.
Yes. Here's the coolest thing, though, for us. Now, look, there's a bunch of other stuff I'm not going to get into. There's more, but this is the one thing that I liked. They're working on a thing called the Z-Man program. It allows a material that allows soldiers to climb up walls, okay?
Okay.
U.S. soldiers must operate, it says, in every condition imaginable, including environments rife with physical obstacles that require soldiers to rely on ropes, ladders, and other heavy climbing tools. This Z-Man seeks to replicate the natural climbing ability of geckos and spiders. This is one of the main products of the Z-Man program is Gek Skin. It's a synthetically produced high grip material. Now, there's a picture here from 2012. All right. Now, if you notice, I start throwing these dates out because they've been doing this for years. It's not brand new.
Right. Yeah.
But in 2012, they did a trial. They took a 16 square inch sheet of Gek Skin and they stuck it to a glass wall. Just went slap and it stuck to a glass plate.
Yeah.
And then they hung. Static hung 660 pounds off of that piece of fabric, and it stayed stuck on that piece of glass.
So this is a real thing.
Real thing.
You're going to be able to be Spider-Man or Brindle Fly or whatever.
Your clothes. You're going to have gloves, your clothes. It'll be up to your strength where you just grab and it'll just stick, and you'll just be able to start climbing stuff.
Cat burglars all over the world listening to this right now are getting excited.
They're going crazy. Yeah. So there's tons of stuff they're working on. I thought you would really enjoy some of that, though. But, yeah, so that's what it is. Folks, like I said, do yourselves a favor. Jump on. Start checking out a bunch of DARPA's work. It is really interesting, and you might as well familiarize yourself now so when they come and the robots take over the world, you'll be able to be like, oh, I know that robot. I got his trading card whenever they're hauling you off to some re-education camp. So it'll be awesome.
That is cool. Like I said, I'm okay with the translation device. I'm even okay with the contacts, but the self-calculating scope that automatically, you know, calculates
the
windage,
the bullets,
and correct dope on your scope, and then the bullet flies on. I'm not cool with that.
No.
You just need to develop a program that makes the bullets fly away from you.
Yeah, right.
As a defense.
Kinetic armor.
Right. Did you see where American asteroid mining is now fully legal?
So we can, now there's no arguments. So we can go, now there's, wait a minute. Is that, like, because remember, I remember last time they were talking about this, and it was like a race to who could get up there first.
Uh-huh.
Is it still going to be, is it open for everybody? Can everybody do it now, or is it just, or America, are we trying again to horn in on it and go, this is only ours?
No, I believe it's open to anybody. It says that earlier today, President Obama signed the U.S. Commercial Space Launch Competitiveness Act, or the CSLCA, into law. Now, the bill deals with a few aspects of space travel. It extends America's commitment to the ISS into the next decade and then loosens the regulatory burden upon space startups and deals with the legalities of asteroid mining. Now, there's a framework for establishing property rights on a celestial body for mining purposes. And although the celestial body itself can't be claimed by a country or a company, that flag on the moon doesn't actually mean it belongs to the U.S., they say. Anything mined by a company is now its own to keep. So basically, all they're doing is
They're
laying down the groundwork, the legality of being able to do this. But it's an act now. And here's the thing. We just now landed on the Philae, what is it, the Philae lander? We've just now been able to land on an asteroid. And so now that that's happened, they think companies like SpaceX or Virgin Galactic and stuff, they're going to start developing, and this mining of these asteroids is a real thing. This is really going to happen.
That's going to be very intriguing to see how this plays out. I'm really, really curious as to see how this whole thing plays out.
Right, because then it's going to become a whole new category of, like, metallurgy or jewels and stuff. I mean, like, you're going to be like, well, my wife's got a diamond ring. Oh, yeah, but that was from Africa. I've got a diamond ring.
Yeah.
From asteroid U264566-5.
Sorry, fellas. Don't let your girlfriends listen
to this.
You know
what I mean?
Don't let your fiancés listen to this, because then they're going to want that.
Right? Yeah. Or this guy's got a gold necklace and be like, dude, that's platinum from, like, you know, Zaire. I've got a chain that's made from an asteroid.
Yeah.
You know, from outer space.
Man. Yeah. This is creating a whole other mess.
But there are materials that are very scarce upon the planet that I think this is a great thing.
Yes. But here's the only problem is if you can. We talk about the coltan and things that it goes into making, the stuff that comes from the Congo and how it's, you know, rife with war and crime. But it's never going to stop, because even though we can go get it from the asteroids, doesn't mean that's the only thing that they've got going for them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a space program to go, well, instead of us doing it here, let's just fly up there and get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So now it's going to be cheaper there than up there. They're going to drop the price of it. And then it's awesome to think about, but I don't think it's going to end well.
I don't think we'll see it in our lifetime.
You're probably right.
Right? Anyways, well, let's take a break, folks. When we get back from the break, Cam is going to bring up some ancient structures, some bizarre, mysterious ancient structures in Japan that I have never heard of. And I'm sure you haven't either. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here. And you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, folks. For those of you that participated along and even the people that had sent us some messages after Kyle had posted a little, I guess you could call a poll on Twitter, and then we had a lot of people send us messages, didn't participate on the Twitter, they just saw it. We kind of came up with the whole idea. People really want to hear more about ancient history and cryptozoology and things along those lines, so that's kind of what we're going to cover actually today. So I'm going to dabble in some ancient history or ancient historic mystery before we get into some crypto things that Kyle's going to throw on us. So to start off, I was doing the course, it was the Palmyra Atoll I did on the Elite Show, and we discussed some strange things about that. Well, that led me to this. I got to looking around at more and more things, and I kind of come across this and thought this would be interesting to talk about because it's more have to do with a megalithic stone structure. And what I'm talking about takes place on the Asuka Island, well, I say island, the Asuka village in there, on the island of Japan. Now, Asuka means flying birds, which is probably has something to do with this. I don't know. It's interesting nonetheless. We're going to be talking about Masudano Inwafun. Now, what that is, like I said, it's a megalithic stone structure. Now, this isn't a village. And as of 2012, this village's population was 6,035 people. So, you know, it's not a huge area. I think the total area is a little over 24 square kilometers. Just an average little village there in Japan. Now, like I said, Asuka is the land where there's ancient Asuka palaces, right? And that's where they were actually located. And this is a neat part about this. There are very, very strict rules governing what can be constructed in this town, even now.
That's cool.
It's a way that they can kind of keep tabs on, I guess, no modernization, if you will. So they kind of, you know, adhere to the old ways, which is neat. Now, in 1956, the village of Asuka was founded as a result of a little merger there by three other villages, Asuka, Sakai, and Taichi. Now, those three joined together to make what this is. So I'm picturing like these old, what you and I love, the old kung fu movies. That's kind of what I'm picturing that's going along there in the forest. They kind of all got together. But that's not where it actually starts. That's where the story kind of starts, but that's not where the whole story of these stones start. Because the village itself can actually trace its origins much further back, all the way back to the Tumulus period, which actually took place between 250 AD and 552 AD. Now, that area is also called the Kofun Jidai, and it translates into Old Mound period, which is kind of intriguing.
Yeah.
You got to imagine this. In this time, there was a lot of burial mounds that was popular, that was taking place, okay? A lot of earthen mounds, and you could always tell these earthen mounds, especially by, I guess you could say, the kings or the princesses and the princes and things, the higher rankings, is they were surrounded by moats, so they would bury them in a mound and then dig a moat around, so they didn't want anybody messing with it. So you can kind of picture the idea of this ancient, maybe feudal Japan, and this is kind of what they've put up there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, during that time, Asuka, which didn't even have that name at all at this point, was being, you've got to imagine, overrun by all these opposing groups. Clans fighting clans, religious factions fighting one another. It was a very, very rough time when all this was going on. But now, nearing the end of that period, the Tumulus period, there were some Buddhist clans And they ended up taking control of that region and pretty much gained control all the way through into what marks the beginning of the Asuka era. Now, this little village is covered with very unusual shaped megaliths. Now, some of those aren't small. We're talking ginormous megaliths, heavy, huge. Like we've always said, you start seeing these stones, you're thinking, how did somebody move them, carve them? There's so many of these things. Now, the area itself is known for Buddhist temples and shrines and all that around there. So that's kind of what you need to set in your mind. But there are other stone monuments in the hills around Asuka. Interesting thing about the ones up in the hills, not so much in the town, but surrounding it, is that they do not fit to any Buddhist stylings. No construction manners, no, you know, basically the whole design is not Buddhist. Nobody really knows who built them when they were built. They're just kind of out of place up there. And that gets us into the largest of these monuments, and that's Masuda no Inwafune. It's said to mean rock ship of Masuda. That's alleged what this translation means.
Right.
Now, you've got to imagine this. There's a little station there, Okadera Station. There's a hill, a very steep hill there by it. That's where Masuda no Inwafune Rock sets at the top of that hill. Now, I'm going to give you the size of this, okay?
Uh-huh.
It's 36 feet by 26 feet by 15 feet, or 11 meters, 8 meters, and 4.5 meters. So we're talking 4.5 meters high, 8 meters wide, 11 meters long. So 36 feet long, 26 feet. It's made of solid granite. By the calculations done, it weighs somewhere around 80 tons. And it's carved like a mound. The whole thing looks almost like a beetle, the way I kind of, but it has two holes. Each one of those holes is about a meter squared. It's right through the center and going down into the ground.
Huh.
So
I've never heard of any megalithic structures on Japan.
It's crazy. When you see this, you pull these pictures up, you're like, what could this thing possibly be for? Now, like I said before, nobody knows who built it. Nobody knows why it was built. Now, there's a large kofun or burial mound. And I say kofun, it's with a K. K-O-F-U-N, kofun. Which is funny to me when I saw that because it sounds oddly like coffin.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of strange. Which is nearby. And that burial mound is thought to be that of King Goshizuka, which is an ancient tomb, and they believe that that was actually a burial area for the Empress Seimei and her daughter, and the daughter's princess Hayashoto. And they say that's based on the shape and descriptions in these chronicles, these old chronicles in Japan. But some have even suggested that it's not. Okay, they say, well, it's really not because they said this is part of a failed attempt, is what they were saying, to make this mound. People are saying, no, it's really not the entrance boulder to this mound, mainly because it's so big. It's 80 tons. You're like, why would somebody go to such great works, mess up a little bit of it, and then just decide not to use it?
Right.
You know, you're like, you would find a way to make it work, one way, especially when it was something that size.
Yeah, because an awful lot of work must have went into that.
Oh, you're looking at it. Look at the size of it, man. It's massive. Now, here's a cool thing from the book Underworld, written by Graham Hancock. Here's a quote out of there. It says, by far the most strikingly enigmatic of the Asuka megaliths is the Masuda no Inwafune, the boast stone. He says, so-called because it is thought to resemble a capsized boat, which juts out from a densely wooded hillside. One puzzling characteristic is that in places, it is rough and unfinished, seemingly entirely like a work of nature, and in other places, beautifully cut into right-angled planes. So it's almost like they've built something out of what was already existing, which in my opinion would probably make more sense than trying to move something this size, is if it was already there, they just carved it into something. Or they only carved what they needed to make work. Now, this boulder is mentioned as far back as the 8th century in Japanese literature, and there's even a passage from the Chronicles of Japan that was, of course, it's been done by earlier scholars and things that actually make a little mention of it. And it says that the Emperor Temu was calling for construction of an astronomical observing platform in 675 A.D. They people believe that this may actually be what he had built, that he had a big stone and they had him carve that out. And there's another thing that says on the seventh day of the second month of spring in 640 A.D., people saw a star that entered the moon, and another Gist star entered the moon on the 9th of July in 642 A.D. So they're like, well, so we know they're watching the stars, they're watching the skies, maybe that's what this was about. But there's another theory that's kind of popular about what it was used for, and like I said, astronomical points. This is kind of sticking more along those lines. This is evidence for this perspective comes from the ridge line across the top of the rock, which runs parallel to the mountain ridge in Asuka and lines up with the sunset on a certain day of the year called the Spring Doyu Entry. And that occurs every 13 days after the sectional solar term pure brightness. And this day was important in the lunar calendar and for early Japanese agriculture, as it signaled the beginning of the agricultural season. However, this perspective has been largely scoffed at and thrown out by scholars who do not recognize it as an ancient astronomical observation station. So a lot of people that have studied it says this is what it is, and then a lot more say, no, we don't think they quite had that grasp when it was made.
I'm looking at the pictures of it.
Okay. Now, there's two stones there.
I was going to say, because I'm looking at two. One looks like it's on like a hillside.
That's
Masuda. And one looks like it's in a deep forest.
In the deep forest is Ishinohadgen.
I gotcha. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely man-made, but it does. It looks like
a ship.
It looks like an upside-down boat or a giant. I'm thinking of like electrical socket.
Right. Okay, yeah.
It looks like something should plug into that, right?
Exactly.
Something huge.
Well, like we talked about, you just brought up Ishinohadgen. That's actually in Tasago City, and that one is a pretty good size one, too. That's a big block right there. Here's it's a 6.45 meter by 5.7 meter by 5.45 meter. Now, here's what's wild. It has similar ridges on the sides, but it doesn't have any holes in it. So,
and they have no clue who built these.
No, that's what's crazy.
Well, they're definitely built by the same people. I mean, it's exactly the same design.
Ishinohadgen is a shrine now. And they've actually dedicated it to the Shinto god, all right, Oshiki Jinya. But like I said, nobody knows who originally built it. Nobody's talked about who originally built it, why it was built. That's what they use it for now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fact that there's a lot of other stone slabs and structures in that area, in that region. And people are saying now that it was inhabited prior to this tumulus period for quite some time in order for it to be there. But nobody has any proof of it. They just have these stones. There's no written anything. There's been countless attempts to explain all of this. All of it's failed. Nobody can really seem to nail it down. Now, they've investigated the rock with ultrasound and measured it with laser scanners. Nothing. They can't find a thing. It's just a rock. So they don't even know at all. This comes from the Asuka Historical Museum. Said the actual purpose of the great megalith remains a mystery. So even the museum itself has no thing at all about it. Here's something interesting. Preston Pete wrote a book called The Disinformation Guide to Ancient Aliens, Lost Civilizations, Astonishing Archaeology, and Hidden History. This is what he has to say about this. Listen to this. Archaeologists have as yet failed to explain evolutionary background to the advanced megalithic skills that suddenly manifested in Japan in the Kofun era and raise the possibility for consideration that the knowledge of how to build with megaliths on such a scale may long previously evolved in areas around Japan's coasts that are now underwater. Now, what does that make you think of? It makes me think of what Graham Hancock talked about in Underworld, where we've talked about Yanaguni, all these things. Maybe there was, prior to the last ice age, whenever everything was much further out of the water, there was a megalithic building group there. Maybe up being on the mountain, it was a very high peak at that time.
Right, yeah.
They had the ability to build. They had the ability to move. They took it up, much like they're finding out with Guyong Padang. Much of these things that they're finding now, maybe that's what it was. Maybe they're right. Maybe the island of Japan was a very busy megalithic center, but now it's all underwater. You know, yeah. I mean, there is arguments, and you know, you can go back and forth about Yonaguni. There's other places there, but these stones, nobody really knows. Like I said, now you got to think of this, and this is where you start feeling bad for the archaeologists and the people studying these things that really do want to find the truth. And I feel bad for them now this way. Imagine language barriers. If you're not really well versed in Japanese or really have a very good interpreter, a lot of this is going to be lost in interpretation by what they're trying to mean. Also, too, I can't imagine them getting along in rural areas so well. A lot of people, you know, may be a little bit hesitant to really open up, like reluctant to trust anybody, I would think, from the outside, right?
Yeah.
Now, like I said, we know a lot of this stuff is Buddhist-themed. What they say, the hardest part they're having right now is it's very difficult to determine what's related to Buddhist movements and what they worship. And what predates this, because the Buddhists had found it and pretty much integrated it into them. So they may have used it. They could have even altered some of it. So they don't know if some of this was here or not. There's another problem. This region's very subtropical. They say it offers a very problematic issue with standard radiometric dating techniques. So it's tough for them to figure it all out because of the climate that this sets in. And also, too, the biggest problem is there is very, very little written history in these rural areas of Japan. Nothing was really written down. They were just villagers. That's all it was. So you've got to think about language barriers, you know, changing languages. All right. Also, too, there may have been no telling what kind of, I don't know how revisionist history is looked upon in Japan. They may have it more set in their ways than what we have in ours. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. Maybe they're open to it, maybe they're not. So maybe somebody on the inside, they're just not willing to let other people come in there and really look and try to help rewrite things. They may not know it. Also, too, a lot of the stuff may be gone now. It may have been picked over, picked through. It may not have been looked. These may be the last few things, period. So without having any written history that they can possibly find other than a little conjecture here and there, without having maybe the support that they need to really go and dig and look and find and all that in that area, it sounds like we're never going to know.
You're never
going
to know. It's just going to remain a mystery.
We're never going to know what these two big giant stones are even for, or even this main one, what it's even used for, what it was even originally put there for. There's a lot of neat theories, but we may never know, man. That's the way it looks, is it looks like this is going to be one of those parts. It was bad. I got into it. I was all excited because the first thing I saw was the shape of that stone. I'm like, dude, this is awesome.
Yeah.
You go to looking at it, and then you get depressed because you realize at that point, the more you dig through it, they're like, the reason you've never heard of it is because nobody knows anything. They just leave it alone. They've run their course with it. That's it.
I'm not disappointed in the fact that they don't know what it is exactly. I'm disappointed by the fact that how many more structures are like that are just underwater now that we'll never know or even there.
Or that are up in the mountains that everybody just, they don't really know any more about them, so they just leave them up growing, the trees growing around them, and nobody looks into them.
Under snow.
Yep.
Glaciers destroyed them.
Yep.
It's underwater now. I mean, there's changes on the Earth. The Earth is a very dynamic planet. There's could be, who knows what could be.
Well, like
been.
We talked about in the Amazon, imagine what's all out there.
Yeah.
That,
I mean,
you
they
just,
find new cities all the time. They're like,
the
oh,
jungle
here's a
took
lost
it
city.
Over. Yeah.
And just to think of how long we've been here on the planet, I mean, there could have been giant cities that were wiped out sometime in the ancient past.
And the only thing that could have been left, if it was built out of wood or any mud and wood,
right, yeah,
and whatever, only thing left are these stones.
The stones.
And we're never going to, and here's the, maybe those are the breadcrumbs. We're just not willing to look at them. Maybe those are the breadcrumbs of all the, everybody always says, well, what would really be left after 20 or 30,000 years? Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
Maybe we are seeing what's left after 20 or 30,000 years, and we're just not looking at it. I don't know. You know, it's a very curious thing to look at and think of and daydream about. But also, too, I'm a little depressed because you always kind of like to be able to wrap it up. There's no wrapping this up. It's open for anybody. I urge any and everybody to go look it up and check it out. It's an interesting Masuda no Inwafune, Masuda hyphen no hyphen Iwafune, or just pull up Asuka, Asuka. And that'll be in the area in Japan. And you'll be able to see the stones, folks. And it is...
it's pretty cool.
It's really something interesting.
Well, moving on, let's move towards the world of cryptozoology. Cam, I know you're a fan of reptilians.
Yes, yes, I am, sir.
You know, I'm always intrigued by the stories of the reptilians, and they've been going on for a long time. And there's all these, you know, crazy ideas that the Illuminati, the people, the secret group that's running the planet, mm-hmm. is actually a group of reptilians. You see in the Creature in the Black Lagoon. I mean, all these stories, you hear a lot of alien abduction stories. Where they talk about the beings looking like reptilians. I've even heard of stories where people have seen reptilians living in the hollow earth.
Yes.
You know, deep within the cave systems. It got me thinking about reptilians. We haven't done any reptilian stories in quite some time. So I compiled a small group of stories here. And some of these are from David Weatherly in his book Strange Intruders, and also from our friend Albert Rosales over at the Journal of Humanoid Studies. If you're not aware of that, you should go over to that. It's a huge list. How many stories did he say he's got over there?
Like 18,000?
Yeah, something ridiculous. And anyways, some pretty cool stories. I'm going to read a couple and then we'll discuss them after the break. Let's get into it. On the cold night of December 6th, 1978, 26-year-old Pierre Fortunato Zanfretta had the first in a series of bizarre encounters with otherworldly creatures. Zanfretta was employed as a private security guard and was on patrol in the small Italian village of Tariglia. Traveling carefully on the then icy roads, Zanfretta was on his way to check on an empty home of a doctor, Righi, when his car suddenly died. The Fiat's engine, lights, and radio all went off at the same moment, not far from the Righi home. Zanfretta spotted four lights moving around the garden of the home and believed that these were thieves attempting to break into the house. With his revolver and flashlight in hand, Zanfretta slipped into the home's open gate and followed a rock wall towards the lights, hoping to surprise any would-be thieves. It was Zanfretta, however, who received the surprise. Preparing to leap out at the criminals, the young guard felt something touch his shoulder from behind. Whirling around, he was confronted not by a human thief, but by a frightening creature that he later described as an enormous green, ugly, frightful creature with undulating skin, as though he were very fat or dressed in loose gray tunic, no less than 10 feet tall. Zanfretta later stated that the creature had greenish skin and yellow, triangular eyes and red veins across its forehead. The creature also had points on the side of its face. After rushing away from the weird creature, Zanfretta reached his car only to see a bright light rise up behind him. Looking over his shoulder, he observed a massive, flat, triangular-shaped craft emitting a blinding light. The craft was bigger than the house that it was rising over. A blast of heat rolled over the guard as he struggled to the radio that was located in his car. At 12:15, he reached the security company's radio operator, Carlo Toccolino. And Toccolino listened to Zanfretta, but at first, he couldn't understand the incoherent ramblings coming from the guard. It was clear that Zanfretta was very excited. All the operator heard him repeating was, "My God, are they ugly?" He asked the guard to calm down and describe the men who had assaulted him, at which point Zanfretta told him, "No, they aren't men. They aren't men." Suddenly, the communication ended. Now, the company's security chief promptly sent another patrol car to the location. Foul weather and dangerous driving conditions made it difficult to reach the site, and an hour had passed before a second car finally arrived. The guards, Walter Laria and Raimondo Mascella, arrived at 1:15. They found Zanfretta lying in a prone position in front of the house. Seeing the two men walking toward him, Zanfretta leapt up and pointed his revolver at him. Seeing his panicked state, the two guards rushed Zanfretta before he could harm them or himself. The two men later stated that despite the fact that he had been laying frozen on the ground, Zanfretta was warm. The Italian military police were called to the scene to investigate, and they found strange marks on the ground behind the house. It was clear that something very large and heavy had left at least two impressions. The marks were 9 feet in diameter and shaped like horseshoes. Some speculated that they were landing marks from a UFO. During the investigation, 52 residents of the village reported seeing bright lights emanating from the direction of the Righi house that night. Now, several reporters got wind of this story and tried to get in touch with Zanfretta to press him further and question him. But Zanfretta didn't want to be famous. He wanted nothing to do with it. He refused notoriety because he was worried about not only his family, but any future jobs he may try to hold. Later, trying to understand what he had gone through and trying to uncover more of the facts, Zanfretta agreed to go under hypnosis. A doctor, Moraro Moretti, member of the Italian Association of Medical Hypnosis, conducted the sessions. Under hypnosis, Zanfretta recalled more details of his weird experience, that not only had he encountered aliens, but they had abducted him. Details began to emerge from Zanfretta while he was under hypnosis. He said that the creatures didn't speak to him in Italian, but rather used a luminous device to translate their own language. Disturbingly, Zanfretta also said that the creatures were from a planet in a third galaxy. He said they desire to talk to us and that they will soon return in much greater numbers. I awoke one night in a state of which I can only explain as a spasm. My body was in a rigid state. I could not move a muscle, and it felt like something was on top of me. I fought to get movement back in my body. I could not turn my head or move at all. It was like I was having a fight to get control of my own body. After a few panic-stricken moments, I could just barely move my fingers, but only a little bit. I then felt that there was more than just a spasm. I felt dirty and touched. It was a horrible feeling from deep inside of me. I could barely move my toes. Barely. Again, very slightly. My throat felt like it was being held. I could feel something was on top of me. My hands were by my side, but it felt like they were around my own throat, holding me tightly. I was using all of my might to break free from this spasmodic state. Then, I could feel something breathing into my left ear. The sound of a growl-like noise right next to my ear. I struggled to move my head to the left, like breaking free from a stranglehold. I could barely see the outline of a head. A big, long head next to my own face. As the spasm-like feeling started to wear off, a tiny bit at a time, I could work out only that this thing was on top of me, and it looked like a lizard or a newt. It was like a blending together of all that was around it, or maybe even invisible. I'm not sure which, but I could see it clearly as the seconds passed on. It was a reptilian. I growled back at it, or at least I think I did. My mind and my body gave all it could to do so. I bared my teeth at it, and I could feel it could read my mind. I was swearing at it and shouting all sorts of obscenities at it. I felt violated and used. The next thing, it was quickly off of me and was standing to one side of the bottom of my bunk bed. A light came through the thin gap in the curtains. There were different shades of a golden light, which also had very small particles inside it, like dust or small stars, which moved around like bright little lights. The reptilian creature stood about 6 feet tall. I could sense it was either proud or happy with itself. Maybe both. I tried to sit up the best I could, but I couldn't. The creature walked forward and stepped into the light beam. As it did, the feet and legs vanished into the light. The more the creature moved forward towards the window, more of it vanished. After it was gone, I felt relaxed, but I could still feel where I was held around my throat. I felt I was raped by this horrendous monster. I awoke to a bright sunny day. I could hear my mother downstairs washing up and doing housework. I laid in my bed and didn't move a muscle. I ran the incident through my mind again and again. Yes, I could still feel where I was held around my throat. I know that this happened. My mind, heart, and soul knows that this has happened. For the life of me, I could not run downstairs to explain to my mother about this. Who would have believed it? How would my parents have handled such a thing? I didn't know what to do. Since that night, my stepfather passed away. I asked my mother if she believed in aliens or even UFOs. She replied that my stepfather said once that he saw a UFO near Brighton while at sea in the 1960s, and he swore that it was a UFO, but only told my mother of this. I never told my mother about my experience, as I thought it would be too harrowing for her to hear. My encounter, or experience I had, happened back in 1954, while I was working with the U.S. Naval Engineers at Zaragoza Air Base near Zaragoza, Spain. I was 24 years old at the time, and was working for my father's construction firm. We were hired by the Department of Defense to refurbish a NATO facility. Now, this was my first time out of the United States, and I really looked forward to going to Spain. After I had been in Spain for a couple weeks, I decided to take in the surroundings. I was told by some of the locals that the Monasterio de Piedra, Nuevielos, would be an excellent place to visit. The monastery was about 60 miles away, so I decided it would be an enjoyable day trip. When I arrived, I met a young lady who offered to show me around the complex. It was a very hot day. It was early in August, so we took numerous breaks along the way. As the afternoon waned and the early evening approached, it was time for me to head back toward Zaragoza. The young lady mentioned that there was a very nice inn not far from the monastery, and if I wanted to stay the night, you should go there. That way you can get an early start in the morning. So I decided to stay the night, maybe do some more exploring that evening. The inn was very rustic, though quite comfortable. I had dinner outside on the back patio. It was an excellent evening. Though it was dusk, I could still see the terrain not far from the inn. There was a vineyard and a small lavender meadow behind the inn, which led to a series of rocky outcrops. I thought that I would take a look around, but I first asked the owner if it was okay to do so. I walked through the vineyard and reached a small pond, which had a loud chorus of frogs. By this time, it was dark, but there was a fair amount of available moonlight. I still needed a flashlight to see where I was going, and I walked around the pond and started to cross a small bridge over a narrow stream. As I walked over the bridge, I noticed something run through the water about 50 feet upstream. There was enough moonlight to where I could make out an upright shape. This thing was heading towards the high rocks, though I lost sight of it. I stood completely silent for about 5 minutes. It was eerie because the frogs were now also quiet. The only sound was coming from the direction of the rocks, and the noise was very strange. It sounded like a guttural yak, yak, yak series that would pause and stop for a few seconds, and then it would repeat. It would also fade in and out. After a few minutes, it stopped. I had no idea what it was. I crossed the bridge and started to slowly approach the rocks. As I came to the rock face, there was a fairly well-worn trail on the ground along the edge. I walked further until I reached an opening in the rock face. I pointed the flashlight inside and saw that it was a grotto about 15 feet deep and high enough for me to stand in. The floor of the grotto was littered with all kinds of small animal bones, so I figured that there were predators about, most likely a fox. I continued on the trail until I heard the yak, yak, yak sound again. This time it was very close. I instantly stopped walking and started searching around me with my flashlight. Just then, some gravel landed on me, and the loud yak, yak, yak sound was coming from above me. I quickly looked up and pointed my flashlight. There was a creature standing on a small ledge about 15 feet away, staring at me with yellow eyes reflecting back. And it was screaming, yak, 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 in quick, constant rhythm. This was the most ghastly thing I've ever witnessed. It was standing on two legs, and it was about 4 or 5 feet tall. It was dark in color and had arms like a human. The face looked like that of a lizard, something resembling that of an iguana, perhaps. After a few seconds, it leaped off the ledge onto the trail, swiftly running on two legs in the opposite direction. It was then that I noticed a long tail as it moved away from me. I quickly made my way back towards the inn and directly to my room. I laid in bed thinking about this creature the entire night. I was terrified to even look out my window, fearing that it may have followed me back to the inn. Early in the morning, I checked out and drove back to Zaragoza. I have no proof, of course, of my experience other than my word. But I do believe what I saw that night, no matter how bizarre, was a reptilian.
Business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, PayLater, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. I hope everybody enjoyed those stories of those reptilians. Cam, what is your ideas on these reptilian stories? And we've even had, before you get to that, I remember reading our friend Lyle Blackburn's excellent book, The Lizard Man. If you're into reptilian stories and you'd like to get the story of the scrape or swamp in Bishopville, South Carolina, I suggest you get a Lyle Blackburn's website. I'll put links to it in the show notes, and you can pick yourself up that book. It's an excellent read. I suggest it. I suggest reading that. But Cam, your ideas on these reptilians. I mean, what is it that these people are seeing? I even remember an episode where you were talking about two guys that were riding like a bicycle across Arizona in the desert, and they came across these lizard-like things. I mean, what is that?
Man, out of all the wild stuff that we talk about, from the Bigfoot to the Fae to shadow people to all this stuff, this is one of those ones that you look. Whether you want to agree or not, you can write off shadow people. You could, and I say you can write off, maybe personally, if you've had a personal account, you can't. But people from the outside can go, look, you were just having a little sleep issue. Maybe you thought you saw something. There's ways that people can justify what they saw to them. It's getting that way with Bigfoot. People can justify, maybe you just saw a bear. Maybe you just saw a deer. Maybe you just saw something you didn't. To me, though, and even the gnomes is maybe, you know, like the little fae. Maybe you just saw a raccoon. You know, there's, how do you say, okay, maybe you just saw a 7-8 foot tall snake. Maybe that's what you saw. To me, this is one of those things that's even harder to explain. Now, look, I'm not explaining away those things I just talked about by any means. I'm just saying I know people that have had those. You know, we get that from time to time. People talk about it. Yeah, you could. You can easily explain it away. It doesn't mean that's what it is. So don't take offense. But what I'm getting at is you can understand how people could misidentify things. How do you misidentify a reptilian? How do you go, oh, man, I thought I saw a giant lizard man with gold eyes, but it was really just a white-tailed deer. So I'm good now. But no, how do you misidentify that? It doesn't fit into anything. Like I say, you see goat man in the woods. Well, you can understand it. Maybe you saw something that was
that you thought
there.
Was a goat man.
Exactly.
It wasn't really. It was a goat.
A lot
whatever.
Of this stuff. But we don't have giant reptiles anymore. So where does that come from?
Yeah, I mean, to wake up in your bed in the middle of the night and see a large reptilian standing at the foot of your bed. I mean, how do you confuse that
dude.
With anything?
Yeah. I don't know.
And what if it's like, I mean, we're kind of poking fun at it a little bit, but not really. What if there are a group of reptilians that are like,
I don't want to even
controlling
think about it.
The backdrop of our world. You know, I mean, it's scary to think of that, and everybody's like, oh, that's preposterous. But, man, there are these sightings, and there's people from all different parts of the world, and they've even been happening for several hundred years. They've been talked about. You can even go back in a really long time ago in the Dark Ages, and there's still these draconian stories of these upright lizards, right? I mean, what is that? Or is it a figment of our imagination because we have still some small reptilian part of our brain?
I hope that's
that just
all it
associates
is.
Anything scary, our mind, you know, like your mind tries to fill these gaps. So if you're really terrified, your mind makes you think it looks like a reptilian, but it's not. I don't know.
I've listened to we listen to tons of podcasts, and we got a bunch of our friends are podcasters now, and they have people on that talk about this reptilian stuff from time to time and all these crazy theories, and I laugh at it, but I don't laugh at it in a sense of I think those people are fools or idiots for even thinking that. I laugh at it so I don't take it serious. That's like my coping mechanism, is I have to laugh at it myself so I don't dwell on it. Because I don't want to look at that. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
You know, it's almost like you try to laugh off being afraid because I'm afraid that it might be something. As crazy as that sounds, I'm afraid that it really might be something going on there with them, and I can't handle that. So I try not to. I like to think of it as just we cover these stories as just awesome stories, and people had some cool sightings, and I try to think of it's just blurring
that's me.
The line.
I enjoy the cool stories, the experiences.
I don't want to think about it being real.
But like David Icke, I mean, remember, he's been talking about this for years.
Yeah.
He's kind of gone away from it lately, but he used to talk about how these reptilians were running our world governments.
Well, right? Why are we okay with Bigfoot being there, but we freak out whenever we talk about Dogman or reptilian?
I have no idea.
I don't get that part. Why is it? Do you think maybe in another 100 years people will be okay with the idea of Dogman or reptilian?
Maybe.
Is it because Bigfoot's been around for so long, these stories? Or is it because now we've accepted him into culture and now they're made movies about him and they're, you know, where he's like Harry and the Hendersons and it's just stuff along those lines?
I remember the old TV series V, remember?
Yeah, the original.
They were
the original V when we were kids.
Yeah. No, the other one, the newer one, I think they took that off the air.
Good.
I don't think they even had more than one season. But anyways, remember when the, what was the lady's name? Diana or something. She'd pull her skin off and it was a reptilian.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember thinking that was so cool as a kid.
Well, even the Sleestaks we've brought up numerous times. That's what I picture. I picture the Sleestaks in my mind. Of course, probably maybe a little bit moving a little faster. Those things could barely get around, so you could probably outrun one.
It was the costumes.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know, man. It's fascinating. But it's also one of those things, it's I'm uneasy thinking about some of these things. I love doing the show. I love covering all these topics. I love interacting with all the listeners and talking to people. But there's still part of me that I'm not willing to let my guard completely down and just go with it. Because it freaks me out.
I enjoy the stories. I truly enjoy the stories. I love to think about, did that really happen to this person?
What would you do if it happened
to
you?
Or they're really creative. What would I do?
Yeah. You know what I mean? That's what I like to think about. Like, what if I was in the woods and saw that? Or what if I was riding my bike and saw that? Yeah, you panic.
You better hope you have your Day-State rifle with
you. All you people in the UK have the best air guns ever. Me and Kyle have been watching, like, indoor air gun competition.
First off, let me say that first. I didn't even know that this was a thing until about 2 hours ago, until Cam inundated me with these videos. I mean, apparently, see, we live in Texas, so like everybody has real firearms, but over there in the UK,
multiples
are harder to get. So they have these air guns. But man, I'm telling you what, these air guns are really neat.
Like, guys, y'all got the best. Dude, it's awesome.
The Day-State Wolverine. Yeah, that's the one I like.
I love those guns.
It's like a $1,400 pellet gun.
Yeah, I don't know, but I want one bad.
Who wouldn't want one?
I want one bad. I mean, I've had BB guns. You got like the Red Riders, the old Gammos. We talked about the old Gammo breakovers, Benjamins and all that stuff. But when I found these videos of guys just driving like dime-sized groups with a pellet gun, I'm like, that's awesome. I don't know. I just want
Christmas is coming up, Cam.
Yeah, right.
Put it on your wish list.
That's what I'm going to tell everybody in my family. Look, I just want a Day-State pellet gun. That's all I want. I'll shoot my eye out.
You didn't get one for your birthday?
I didn't know. I would have already asked. I didn't get one for my birthday. Doggone it.
I saw you got a lot of birthday wishes.
Yes. Thank you, everybody that sent me messages, that posted on Facebook, that sent us emails. Thank you very, very much. I've truly feel loved. Thank y'all very much for the birthday wishes. Yep. I've taken the big step over the threshold. I'm in the 4-0 zone now.
Wow. Do you feel any different?
No. I don't feel a lick of, dude, I haven't felt different since I was about 25 or 30. It just feels the same. Although I can tell my eyes are getting older, because when I turn the lights off in the room, I got to wait a minute before I can move so I can get my eyes checked.
I never wore glasses in my entire life till 2 years ago.
Because your eyes are dumb.
They are now.
Well, my eyes are getting there. I'm going to have to go get them checked because I'm getting older, but oh well, we'll see what happens.
Well, if you want more reptilian stories, I suggest you go over to Albert Rosales' website. Like I said, I'll put it in the show notes. If you have any reptilian stories of your own and you would like to share them with the show, you can email the show at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Also, if you want more of Expanded Perspectives, you can sign up for Expanded Perspectives Elite. Just go to the website, click on the Elite tab, and signing up is easy. And for the price of a latte, $5, you'll get access to the entire back catalog, as well as a new episode every Thursday. Cam?
Yes, sir.
Anything else you have before we close the show?
No, sir. Everybody just have a great week. Try to stay safe.
Get your shopping done for Christmas as early as you can. You know, I was shopping with my wife just the other day, and man, the stores were crowded. And I gave her like a 3-hour limit, and I said, after this, we're buying everything else online, so let's make it good. It's ridiculous. People are rude. They just run into you. I was standing still, and a woman ran into me with a shopping cart and was like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you. Didn't see me.
It's not like you're inconspicuous.
It's brightly lit. I'm standing there. I mean, and then several times I'm like, pardon me, excuse me. People don't acknowledge you.
No.
You could tell even the cashiers, they had had enough. Because, like, they're not even talking to you. There's no, hey, how's it going? I mean, they're just going through the motion. And I feel bad for them. I'm like, I bet.
Yes.
Imagine doing that for 12 hours, whatever.
I feel bad for them.
Yeah. Anyways. Sounds terrible. Hope everybody has a good week. Take care. Please drive safe. Tell somebody you love them. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale. We are Expanded Perspectives.
Peace.
for coming correct. We select on the set beats and rhymes that are both in check. The ingredients for coming correct. We select on the set beats and rhymes that are both in check.
See the shit don't stop until the break of dawn, and goes on and on and on and on. Fucking what? Every time that I try.
It is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.